Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Right Now Weekly Radio Show, hosted by Vicki Winterton, founder of Expert Insights Publishing, home of best-selling books, award-winning magazines, global broadcasts and communities. Right Now is a highly educational, inspiring, and empowering show focused on writing, publishing, and marketing your books, featuring outstanding guests from across the globe, including best-selling authors, world stage speakers, thought leaders, and visionaries with proven strategies, secret formulas, and treasured resources to help you succeed and make an impact. Welcome, sit back, and enjoy the show. And now your host, Vicki Winterton.
Hi, this is Vicki Winterton, and I'm thrilled today because with us we have the author, Michael Preeb. What's so special about Michael? What makes him tick? What kind of life did he lead to write the stories the way he writes his stories? Michael says, "We only have one life to live, and I want mine to be one of shared adventures. Come and experience this wonderful life with me through amazing stories that take you to wonderful and new worlds. But be warned, not all stories have happy endings." He'll also be sharing with us his new book, The Fifth Battalion. Michael, welcome. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. Very, very happy to be here.
Michael, tell us a little bit about how you got it started writing.
Well, I always liked writing, but I've never written anything professionally until 2008. In 2008, basically, I just found myself with too much free time on my hands, and there was a lot I wanted to say at the time, so I just started saying it. It had to do spiritual endeavors and my spiritual journey and research and so forth, and there's quite a bit to share. That's how it all started.
Oh, that's wonderful. So what inspires you to write, Michael?
Well, like I said, I've been engaged in spiritual research. I call it spiritual research. I studied 28 different religions, some of them in depth, some of them I consider myself an expert. And, you know, there are certain things that I understood and certain things that I gained, certain abilities that I gained. I became a psychic healer. And all the way along this route, which actually took over 30 years, I like really seriously started doing it in 1987. So that would make it like 32 years approximately. There are some adventures and there is something to share. And there is something that I understood, something, some ways that I think I can help people. So I have like a certain message. I have a certain spiritual message that I'm trying to convey. And I put it in different form. The Fifth Battalion, for example, is a science fiction novel. So that's one way of putting it. I have nonfiction books. I have short stories. I have a memoir, you know. So it's in different ways, but basically it's the spiritual that I'm trying to convey.
That is really interesting that you use so many different methods and different genres of writing to make that happen. Tell us a little bit about the 5th Battalion.
The 5th Battalion is an interesting story. I created it myself, but I like it. You know, I liked it from the beginning. It was a really cool story. It started, I think it started from watching a National Geographic channel. And I think it was some years ago already. But I think somewhere in Bolivia or Ecuador, somewhere, there are some catacombs. You know, so there are these hills, there are these like mountains. And in there are passages inside, you know, the mountains that seem to have been made by people and nobody knows why and nobody knows when kind of thing. So that really intrigued me. And from there, I just started unwinding this whole plot that actually Earth is a prison planet of Murabi Empire, where souls of the prisoners, of the most incorrigible, the most, repeated offenders, who cannot be changed or corrected in any way, rehabilitated. So those souls are transmitted here as a transmission instantaneously after the execution to Earth. And with their memories, completely wiped out, so they don't know who you are. So the receivers are installed in the oceans, and they just basically come out of the ocean, and they have no idea where they came from or who they are, these souls. And they take the bodies that exist at the time, and they live here and reincarnate here, and they have no clue that they really are in prison, and everybody is in the same boat here, that everybody is a prisoner. Because everybody committed horrible crimes, not because, you know, the true due course of legal proceedings took place, and here we are. Okay, so, and then 5,000 years ago in the Andes, there was a landing. There was an attempt of an invasion of Earth by Mirabi Empire's arch enemy, the Balthazar Confederacy, and they landed here. You know, at least they landed 2,000 troops in here, which was called the 5th Battalion. And these 2,000 troops were supposed to set up the base and prepare the bunkers and passages and the base basically for the whole invasion. And the invasion, it wasn't particularly an invasion of entire planet. It's just that Balthazar needed a safe base here. And the planet looked underdeveloped and there's no particular threats. So they didn't know that it was a prison planet because the prison guards who are also here, there's a contingent of the guards, but they keep low profile. They stay low so as not to alert the convicts of their presence because the convicts are not supposed to know that they're in prison. So that's kind of part of the sentences that they're not supposed to know, and their memory, long-term memory of their past lives and so forth had been wiped out. And yeah, so they landed in the Andes, 2,000 men and women, and they started building their passages and they started building the base in the Andes when they were brutally wiped out by the guards who took their landing as an act of war. Understandably, they didn't realize that the 5th Battalion, the Balthazar troops, didn't even suspect that they were here. So all 2,000 troops had been wiped out 5,000 years ago, approximately, in the Andes. The passages and the base remained unfinished and grew over with vegetation and so forth. And they have been reincarnating here ever since. So here they are, 2,000 invaders among us, reincarnating into Earth's bodies, living among us and so forth. But they know that they belong to the 5th Battalion, and their duty as prisoners of war is to escape. So they've always been trying to escape from Earth, and I described two such attempts. And now, at this time, now, as I mean, like right now, in San Francisco, they're mid another escape attempt. In order to escape, they need a spaceship from the guards. That's the only spaceship which is operational on the planet. They still don't have anything else. There's no other means how they can escape other than with this spaceship. As souls in a disembodied state, they cannot escape because, as being a prison, Earth is surrounded by a force field. And this force field is keeping the souls in, you know, because it's a prison. So they have to get the spaceship. The spaceship is hidden. They can never find it. There are all kinds of adventures. So now they found it. And there is a dedicated and ruthless group of people who are trying to prevent their escape, and we don't know who they are. Finally, we find out who they are, and so forth. There's a lot more to this, and so forth. And they become finally allies. The 5th Battalion becomes allies with the guards against this ruthless group of people, and so forth. And they finally escape. That's the whole story. So it's an action thriller. There's a lot of shooting and a lot of chases, and a romance story that spans millions of years, because we are talking about immortal spirits here. So it has it all. It's fun. It's adventure. It's humorous. It's gory. It's good. It's a good book. I reread it recently. I really liked it.
That is really, really an interesting concept. I just can't tell you how impressed I am with the imagination that made that happen. It's really incredible. So what do you hope readers might take away?
You see, like, we have a lot of different brands of spirituality happening, and people have different brands of spirituality. And I'm not saying that anybody is wrong, but here's what I found in my research and in my quest, is that religion, any religion, is limiting. There is always some kind of limits that they put, which is the dogma. So they're saying this is right and this is wrong, and this, you know, don't do it that way, because if you do it that way, you're going to be, you know, brimstone to death or whatever. So, or don't do it this way, because of course then you're going to be smitten by God from the sky, you know, all these things. And so the concept of spirituality, as I found it to be true, is constantly being limited. Limited and brought down to kind of our level, you know, that God is a cantankerous old man who is going to smite you, and he is always judging you, and he's judging, you know, he's sitting there judging everybody all the time. You know, this is like demeaning, you know, of what I think is actually going on. You know, and I do represent myself here. In other words, I say what I think is true, right? And I think this is baloney. It's counterproductive in creating, you know, spiritual abilities in a person to believe in this stuff. Or even other things that are prevalent right now, such as, you know, Goonies or, what, you know, the undead, the vampires, the zombies, you know, all kinds of these things that go boo in the night and all that. That's another way of putting this whole thing down and somehow making it unworkable for people. So I'm trying to introduce certain concepts that are known to most people, but I'm just like bringing it home. There's nothing that I'm saying probably that's completely new, but I'm just saying that, okay, we are immortal spirits. We do have past lives. We can remember past lives. The reason we don't remember past lives for the most part is because we don't want to. That also comes up. There could be other more mechanical or more violent reasons why we don't remember. But we do have those past lives, and they do affect our lives. And there is a whole huge wealth of experience and knowledge and the skills that's locked up in our past lives that could be unlocked, and we could be using it or drawing from it or tapping into it, at least to some degree, which would increase our chances now tremendously, you know. And those things that love, so we have gays, we have straight, we have different genders now, more than two type thing, you know, we have all this, and we have this concept of love. So for some people it's difficult to understand that two people, let's say two females, can love each other, or two males can love each other. It's unreal. It seems like whatever. So I'm just kind of like presenting them what I uncovered about the true nature of love. So there's this guy, the main character. His name is Norman Bolstad, and his girlfriend, Linda, they've actually been lovers for millions of years. So they don't meet each other in every single lifetime, but every once in a while they run into each other, and they always seek each other out. They always try to find each other, even if they don't know completely who they're looking for or why, but they are trying to find each other. They're always seeking each other out, and every once in a while they do find each other. And when they find each other over the ages, they can be in all kinds of combinations, because they can reincarnate, like he can be a she and she can be a he, or they both can be a he or they both can be a she, or she can be married and be 20 years older or 30 years older and different, you know, different levels of society. You know, it doesn't really matter. If they find each other, they will be together. That's kind of the main thing that I'm trying to bring. So that's also something that I was trying to communicate. We can judge and judge and judge, looking from viewpoints of different religions or upbringing that we have. But the truth of the matter is that we transcend all those religions. And when two people who had been together before and loved each other before, when they find each other, they stay together, regardless of their marital status or gender or whatever. Or they could become very good friends, too. They could become. Or they could become parents and children also. But if they are, you know, if it's shaping up to be like a lover situation, they will be together. So that's the second thing. Then the true concept of honor. You know, in the army, not just in the U.S. Army, in Russian army, you know, I came from Russia originally. It's even worse in all through the history in the armies. Honor is substituted with orders. Like, you don't do honor, you do orders. You do what you're told, and you do your orders, and so forth. However, in this particular situation, Pentagon and actually the White House had been hijacked by an unscrupulous group of con men who have their own agenda, and it has nothing to do with honor or greater good or anything else, or even any kind of nationalistic ideas about the United States. They don't even care about the United States. They are not even from the United States or anything like that. So the Pentagon had been hijacked, and all this organization which issues order, the command, and so forth, is compromised heavily. And orders that they're issuing are wrong. And military, you know, the special forces is completely in agreement. Whatever the orders are, they will do their best. They will die by hundreds and thousands to comply with the order, even if the order is really bad, really destructive, really illegal, or whatever. They will still fight and die, and they will do, and they consider it their duty to comply with the order. You know, so that is brought up. But that is not all the military that does that. In the book, there is a contingent of National Guard from Newport, Oregon, that actually decided to not comply with the order and so forth, but do what's right and comply with the Constitution of the United States. You know, so there's this whole question about order versus what's right and what's honorable to do. So there's that. So I guess that's about it. The main thing, of course, is the spirituality, that we live more than one.
Yeah.
We have to have kind of thing.
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. So if you were to give new writers some idea of encouragement in their writing, what would your advice be?
In the writing, you know, I taught kind of informally, I taught short story writing. I'm not sure if it's completely applicable to novels as well, but I guess it is. For the short story, I think the beginning point, like where people start, is with personal experience. So I would recommend anybody who wants to be a writer to gain more personal experience, gain more experience. This is kind of what I found, that personal experience is lacking. People kind of like didn't have enough calamities and near-death experiences and anything horrible in their life to really touch the nerve of the audience. So the short stories become kind of lame. I give an example, like I have a video about it. I have several, actually, about like short story writing. There was the short story, the example that I've given there is that the short story is about this Uber driver who at around 11 p.m. gets, you know, a call to go to a certain address to pick up a client, and he goes there, and it turns out to be a cemetery. And he waits in front of the cemetery for about 10 or 15 minutes. He tries to call his fare. Nobody is answering, so he finally understands that it's probably a prank call, and he just leaves. And that's the whole short story. And I take the short story to explain that there is not enough life experience to make it really work as a short story, to make it interesting, to grab attention, to really like really set a reader on some kind of journey and some kind of destination, that it could be made into a short story. But even then, in order to make it into a horror story, the writer would need to have some kind of horror experience and have the experience of kind of hair crawling in the back of their head. They have to have this experience in order to convey it. Otherwise, they have nowhere to draw it from. So the first thing that I would recommend people is just like take chances and go out there and live life as if it was a battle on the ramparts, not necessarily fighting with anybody, but like really going for it. That's what I would recommend.
Oh, what great advice, Michael. What great advice, and what a wonderful author and storyteller you are. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Vicky. Much appreciated. I enjoyed it.
I know that the 5th Battalion can be found on Amazon and in major bookstores, but is there a website that you have where people could go to maybe connect with you on the web?
I have a website. It's my name, michaelpreve.com. That's it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Michael. We really appreciate you being with us and sharing such valuable information. And I'm so excited about your book. It's really excellent. So we're thrilled that you were able to join us.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Vicky. Much appreciated. Thanks.
And for those of you who would like to learn more about Expert Insights, our best-selling books, our award-winning magazines, our global broadcasting communities, you can find us at mybookmybiz.com. That's MYBOOK MYBIZ.com. And everyone have a wonderful week.